Begin the current daf Masechta Shabbos daf Yutes. Begin two lines from the top of the Yamed. The Gemara continues discussing the theme of the previous daf where we left off regarding the machlekes between Bishamay and Bishil. If a person could begin an activity, a malacha, or something related to any other iser, and so to speak, finish his action, but the activity will continue in the hands of a goy, or in the hands of an animal, or some other area, let's say a mill, if that's permitted or not. Bishamay said that one cannot do it because the activity will continue, although his action has, so to speak, finished, but it will be continued with what he has started, so that's forbidden. Bishil says it's mutter. So Gemara continues on a similar theme as the Gemara brings from Abraisa. Tanaban. A person is allowed to place food in front of a dog in his yard. And again, a dog is a type of an animal where it's incumbent upon him to feed that dog because there's an Isser on Shabbos to feed in the animals that are not incumbent upon you, that say you don't own them. But if it's something that is, it's your responsibility, then you're allowed to put food in front of them. And the halacha is not loy b'yotzev. The dog takes it and goes out from your domain, which is the Isra of Leitzah, from, let's say, a private domain to a public domain, from Shas Yechad or Shas Ram. In this kokon law, you don't have to involve yourself with the dog because it's not your fault. Although you gave it to him, so to speak, you started it. However, since you didn't actually take it out, the dog took it out, it's not a problem, and you could let him. You don't have to stop the dog from taking it out from Shas Yechad or Shas Ram. Similarly, you could put food in front of the guy in the yard. Not the guy then takes it and leaves from your property in this kokon law. You don't have to stop him. So though you offered him, let's say, a candy or whatever, and he's from the table, say, here, take this candy. He goes and he takes it and he goes outside with it. You don't have to stop him. And that's because, again, because what you did, you never did in the Isra, although the guy and the caliph are, so to speak, doing it. So that's not your problem. So the Gemara asks, Hasu Lamali, why'd I need both cases? Hainohach, it's the same case. The case of the Nachri, of the non-Jew, is the same as the caliph, as the dog. Why would I have to say both cases? The Gemara says, I would have thought to say that by the case of the caliph of the dog, it's incumbent upon you to feed that dog. It's your ownership, and therefore you have to feed him. That's why it's allowed. And therefore, we let you to feed him in spite of the fact that we know that he's going to take it out. Whereas the case of the non-Jew, where you don't have to feed him, therefore possibly would say that you're not allowed to feed him because then it's going to take it out of the Rishos Yechad Rishos Ram. Kamashman, they would tell you that no, it's not a problem because you're allowed to feed him in spite of the fact that he's going to take it out. That's, so to speak, not your problem. You didn't take it out. And even if he's going to take it out, you don't have to stop him. Similarly, the Gemara brings Tanya Bar Lun Nebraisa, a similar discussion. Layasker Adam Caleb Lenachri Be'er Shabbos. A person is not allowed to rent his appliances, his objects, to a non-Jew on Erev Shabbos. In other words, certain objects that he could do a malacha with, he's not allowed to rent it to him on Erev Shabbos on Friday, because it seems like that you're renting it to him for Shabbos. So therefore, you can't rent him this car or this tractor, because it looks like he's going to do this malacha, and you're, so to speak, renting it for him to do it on Shabbos. However, bedal v'hei mutter, but if you rent it to him on Wednesday or Thursday, then it's permitted. And Taisa explains that this iser, why you're not allowed to rent it to him, what are you doing forbidden, is because it seems like that you're taking rent for Shabbos. It's called Schar Shabbos. That even though, if let's say you're renting it to him for a full month or a week, that is still, and that's a heter, because that's, so to speak, called Havlo. You're not renting it just for Shabbos, so you're not being over on the Issa of Schar Shabbos. However, if you rent him on Friday, then it's Marasayin. It seems like that you're doing it, although you're renting him for the week, it seems like you're renting him just for Shabbos, and that would be an Issa of, so to speak, making money over Shabbos. However, Tosfos says if it's a daily rental, then even on Wednesday or Thursday would be aser, because you're not allowed to make a specific amount of money just for the day of Shabbos. And since it's a daily rental, you'd be making money just on Shabbos. So Tosfos says the case over here that it's mutter on Wednesday or Thursday is, again, that they're both talking about weekly rental. However, Wednesday or Thursday is not a marasayin, because then it seems like that it's for a full week. But if you do it on Friday, it seems like you're doing it for Shabbos. So the Gebraisa says, Kayetze, by similarly, a similar law is, Imashalchan Igris Biyad Nochri B'Erev Shabbos. Now let us send a letter in the hand of a non-Jew on Erev Shabbos, because then again, it seems like he's your messenger, as if he's your shliach, and you're sending it to him that you want him to take it on Shabbos. B'dal Behei Mutter, but if you send him on Wednesday, Thursday, then it's permitted, because then again, it's not Marasayin. It doesn't seem like that you're asking him to do it for you on Shabbos. So the Gemara comments on this halacha that Amr Lov Rabbi Yosi HaKoyin. And they say about Rabbi Yosi HaKoyin, V'Amr Lov Rabbi Yosi HaChassid, some say it was about Rabbi Yosi, the pious one, that his handwriting was never found in the hand of a non-Jew ever, because he didn't want the non-Jew to be delivering it on Shabbos. And it's going to be Marasayin. People are going to say, oh, he's sending him his shliach, which is the Isra of Amir al-Akim. Now they'll have a non-Jew do something in Malach of you on Shabbos, and it's going to seem like he's asked him to do it on Shabbos. So therefore, he never let a non-Jew deliver his letters, because he didn't want this type of situation that could come where it would seem like that he sent the guy to do it for him. Now the Gemara continues with a related brisa. However, it's important to keep in mind that there's two types of shlichas for the following Gemara. A shlichus is when you have someone doing the work that you need for you. There's one that's called schiris, which is that you're paying him for your work. It's as if he's your messenger, and you're paying him for the hours or for the amount of time that he's doing work. Something else called kablonis, which is you set him a set amount. For example, when you give something to the cleaners or to the tailor, you don't pay him for the amount of time that he works. You pay him for the job. So therefore, he's doing everything on his own das, so to speak. He's doing it for himself. It's not, so to speak, he's doing your activity. You're paying him for what he's doing. And that's important to keep in mind, as we're going to see in the following braisa. So Tana Rabban. Ein mishalach in the geres biad nachi erev Shabbos. You're not allowed to send a letter with a non-Jew on the erev Shabbos, as we learned previously. However, there's an exception. Elim kein koitz leidam. That's the exception would be unless he stipulates for him a fee, and that is since he sets a certain amount of money, that all the effort and toil that the person is doing, and then he's working at certain times. For example, on Shabbos, he's doing it for himself because he's not doing it for the Jew. He's getting paid no matter when he does it or how much time he does it. So therefore, the time that's being invested and when and how he's doing it is that he's doing it for himself because he wants to finish up the job. And then, as the Bryce is going to say, Beis Shammai doesn't agree even in this halacha regarding even if you did what's called katzatz, even if you stipulated a set amount. Because even when you set a certain amount, Beis Shammai argues, because it's not better, as we learned in the previous daf, regarding if you're selling something or lending something or giving as a gift to the non-Jew, that Beis Shammai says you're never allowed to do that on Erev Shabbos. And that is because if you're starting something that the non-Jew is going to end, even if it has nothing to do with you anymore, that's forbidden. However, it's related to the halacha for Beis Hill. At Beis Hill, we're saying that where you don't set a certain amount, that there even Beis Hill would not argue that it would be forbidden for the non-Jew to do it on Shabbos, because again, then he's your shliach, because then every time that he's working, he's getting paid for you, and so to speak, he's an extension of you. Versus when there's what's called kablanus, when he's, so to speak, getting paid for the certain amount of money for the job, then that wouldn't be a problem. Then Beis Hill would hold that it'd be mutter. So the Braisa says, Beis Shammai Oimrim, that this that we say that if you stipulate a certain amount of money, that then he could go ahead, you could give him the letter to deliver, and you give it to him on Erev Shabbos to go ahead and deliver it, no matter how long it's going to take, even if he's going to do it on Shabbos, that's Kedesh Yigila Beisit. Only if there's a sufficient amount of time that he could get to his house. In other words, to the house of who you're sending it to the recipient. And then that's similar to, as we learned from Beis Shammai in the previous staff, that then since he's going to be done before Shabbos, then there's no problem, because there's not going to be any melacha done on Shabbos. Basil says it doesn't have to reach the house of the person that's being sent to. It's enough if it's going to reach the house that's the closest to the wall of the city where that person lives that you're sending it to. So this is the machlokes. Again, everyone agrees that you can't send it on Erev Shabbos, because again, that would seem like he's your shliach, and that's something that he's sending for, you're doing an amir l'akim for him, it seems like, for Shabbos. Versus if you set a certain amount of money, where then he's not your shliach, he's doing it for himself, because no matter how long it takes for him, that's how much money he's going to get. However, then it depends if he could only get to the person's house, Beis Shammai says. And Masil says, it has to get to the house closer to the wall, to which the Gemara asks, v'halei kotzatz. But you set a certain amount of money. In other words, why would Beis Hillel say that it's usher up until he gets to the house that's closest to the wall of the city? It doesn't have to get to his house, but it has to get to the house that's the first one that when you come to the city. But Beis Hillel said before on the previous daf that it's mutter as long as you finished your part of the malach, although the mill is going to be going on Shabbos, or if you gave a gift, or you lent something to a guy, you gave him a ton on Erev Shabbos, even though he's, so to speak, doing Haitzah on Shabbos, it's not a problem because you finished your activity, and although he's doing the malach, it's okay. So why will be here that when I gave him a certain amount of money, if I give the cleaners $50 for all the cleaning and he's doing the work on Shabbos, that's not my activity. So why would Beis Hillel hold when you're sending a letter, does it have to be that he has to get to a certain place? Why does it make a difference? Beis Hillel says that once you set aside, it has nothing to do with me. I set the amount of money that you have to do it for. So then it should be mutter, even if he's not getting to the wall, and that it should get to the first house in the city. So the Gemara says, the Gemara agrees. Amar Rav Sheshes Hachakama. What the Braisa was saying was as follows. V'im loy katzatz. And if you don't set a certain amount of money, that you don't stipulate a fee, that is, you're not paying him per job, you're paying him, let's say, for the hour. So then Beis Shammai Oimrim, so then Beis Shammai says, that's until he gets to his house. As Beis Shammai said in the previous daf, everything has to be done. You can't have a malacha that you started, although you have nothing to do with it anymore, if it's going to be done on Shabbos. Beis Hillel said, regarding if you did not set a certain amount, then it's enough, until it gets to the house that's closest to the wall. However, if you set a certain amount of money, then Beis Hillel would say, of course, then you could go ahead, and even he could do a regular haitzah, he could do all the malachas he wants on Shabbos, because I finished doing what I was doing before Shabbos. But then the Gemara asks, V'amit reisha ein mishalchen. The reisha says that you're not allowed to send, which sounds like, at all. And that is unless, if, as the Braisa says, you can't send a letter on Erev Shabbos only if you stipulate a fee. And that is, or if it gets to the person's house before Shabbos. Because if not, then it's, as it would seem, elementary, that then he's your shliach, which is asur for it to be done on Shabbos. So how could you say that Beis Hillel is talking about when you don't do a katzitz, then it's enough until it gets to the house that's closest to the wall? The Rashi makes it sound like that no, that it has to get to the actual house of the recipient, because or else he's doing your service. He's your shliach, and that would be an isur of amir la'akim, that you're having a guy do for you malach on Shabbos. So how do we resolve this internal contradiction? So the Gemara says, loy kasha. That it depends. The Rashi and the Seifa are talking about two similar but different cases. And that is the Seifa that was talking about that it's mutter as long as it gets to the first house of the wall of the city. That's hodik via beidoy b'masa. That's if it's fixed in the city, the mayor's residence. And that is the ruler of the city where they used to send all the letters to him. And there it's talking about that it's mutter as long as it can get to the house closest to the wall. However, this case of the ratio that was talking about, that it would be totally usur until it could get to actual the person, the recipient's house, that's talking about a place where the mayor's residence is not established in the city. And that is, we said that if a person's sending a letter without stipulating a fee, so then the messenger has to be able to get, according to Beis Shammai, to the post office, to the person that it's being delivered to, or according to Beis Hillel, to the house that's closest to the wall of the city. The ratio that said that you can't send at all unless it could get to the person's house if you didn't stipulate a fee, that was talking about that there was not established, there's no, so to speak, place where you can always send it to. For example, like a post office, the mayor's residence was like the post office, and you couldn't send it to him. Therefore, if you don't find the person, you have to go after and search for him, and therefore the non-Jew is going to possibly be going on Shabbos to go ahead and deliver it, and therefore that's why it's forbidden unless there's enough time for him to get to the person's house. However, as we said before, but if you stipulate a fee, then Beis Hillel would hold that that would be always mutter. That's even if you, so to speak, he's going on Shabbos explicitly, because once I finished my action, when I stipulate a fee, everything he's doing is for his own interest, because he's getting the same amount of money either if he does it today, he does it on Sunday, Monday. So if he's doing it on Shabbos, he's doing it for himself. So therefore, according to Beis Hillel, that would depend if there's a, so to speak, an established place where the letter could go to. So then it's enough if it could get to the wall of the city, because there's one place where it has to go to. Versus this, we said that no, it has to get to the person's house, was when there's no other place, and therefore he's going to have to be going around the Shabbos, and everyone's going to see that this person's delivering for this Jew on Shabbos. And therefore we said it has to be enough time to get to the person's house before Shabbos. But both these cases are talking about when you did not stipulate a certain amount of money, he wasn't getting paid a set fee. But again, if he's getting paid a set fee, then Beis Hillel would hold, then that's always mutter, and even on Erev Shabbos, because that's the same as we learned on the previous staff, the Beis Hillel holds once you finish doing your activity, although the Malacha will be continuing on Shabbos, that's mutter. The Gemara brings a similar discussion, again, regarding something that you started before Shabbos. How much time do you have to give yourself if you're starting something which is forbidden on Shabbos? So turn up on, we learn the Braisa. You're not allowed to embark on a ship less than 3 days before Shabbos. However, when did we say that this would be forbidden? That's for a discretionary matter. For a mitzvah purpose, then even on Wednesday or Thursday or Friday, you're allowed to get on the ship, even though it's right before Shabbos. However, what the person should do is then you stipulate with the captain that on the condition that he will refrain from moving the ship on Shabbos. And obviously, he's not going to rest. That's the opinion of Rebbe. And that is, you make the condition with the non-Jew that I hope you're not going to go travel on Shabbos. But obviously, he doesn't have to, because the whole idea is that you just have to reveal your das that you don't want him to, and therefore then it's, so to speak, like an einus, and he's not your shliach because you told him you don't want him to travel on Shabbos. That's the opinion of Rebbe. Says you don't even have to make the condition. It's enough if it's a dvar mitzvah. He's not doing it for you. It's something that it's not a problem even on Friday to get on the ship if it's a dvar mitzvah. However, the Braisa concludes that umitzru letzeidon, afila be'erev Shabbos mutter, that from tzur to tzeidon, which is takes less than a day to travel, and on Fridays they used to have the market day, the Yom HaShuk, as the Gemara in Pesachim says in Daf Nun. So therefore, that trip was permitted even on Erev Shabbos, again, because that was, so to speak, is not going to take more than a day, and therefore it's not a problem of getting on even on Friday, because it's not a trip that's going to take you to do on Shabbos. This halacha about getting on the ship before Shabbos, and that it's permitted more than 3 days before, is a big machlokes in the Rishonim, exactly what is the prohibition of getting on the ship. And so there's at least four different types of opinions in the Rishonim. Some say because there's a problem of tchumen, that you might be going out of the boundaries of the city, which is forbidden on Shabbos. Some say that it's because of a problem of seasickness, and it's not going to be covered in Oynig of Shabbos being in such a state. Some say it's because the Isra of swimming on Shabbos, and some say because there's a great possibility that there's going to be a need to be Mechal Shabbos, as the seas are dangerous places. So if for no reason, you're not allowed to put yourself in that predicament before Shabbos. So why is it Mutter at least 3 days before Shabbos? So according to the Rif's Pshat, which he's the one that says, for example, at seasickness, so he says that it's only within 3 days of embarking on the ship that you get seasickness. After that time, you get acclimated to it, and therefore you're not going to get sick, and that's why from more than 3 days before Shabbos, it's permitted. And according to the Bahag, that he says the reason that because it's going to be a very likelihood that you're going to have to Mechal Shabbos. That's only from Wednesday and on, which is that's when Shabbos, so to speak, starts beginning. That's the Achanis, the week of Shabbos. That's when we say in the Shir Shal Yom L'chun Rano, that's when we start, so to speak, looking at Shabbos. That's when you have to consider the Chil Shabbos. But beforehand, you don't have to consider the fact that there might be a situation where Chil Shabbos is going to happen. And that's why more than 3 days before, it's permitted. The Gemara continues with another brisa with a similar type of a discussion regarding starting something before Shabbos. Tarnabon, ain't sarin alayarish al nachim. You're not allowed to lay siege to a city of non-Jews. Pachis megimel yodim krein l'Shabbos. If it's less than 3 days before Shabbos. V'im eschilo en mafsikin. But if they started already, then they don't stop. And b'chein ho yishai ma'iman. So too Shama used to say from quoting a pasuk. He used to say, it says in the pasuk, ad ridito. Until they're conquered. That is, afilah b'Shabbos. Even on Shabbos, it's permitted. Once it was started, you go ahead and you finish up the war. Similarly, as we mentioned before regarding embarking on a ship, so what's this idea about starting a war with non-Jews less than 3 days or more than 3 days before Shabbos? So this is similar to like before. That is, the 3 days, the first 3 days of a war, the soldiers are worried. And therefore, that would be, so to speak, like the Rif's Pshat of seasickness, that it's more than 3 days, then they don't have that initial fear of the war. And therefore, more than 3 days before, you're allowed to start the war, because then they won't be in that terrible state of mind on Shabbos. And similarly, regarding like the Bahag's reason of Chil Shabbos, again, during a war, obviously, there's going to be Chil Shabbos happening. So therefore, less than 3 days, we can't start in that initial war mode because of the Chil Shabbos that's going to happen. But more than that, we don't have to be considering yet the Chil Shabbos that's going to happen. Now then, the Gemara quotes from the Mishnah. The Mishnah said, Amar Reb Shimon Gamliel, Noigin Hoyu B'chulu, that the Reb Shimon Gamliel says that my father's house, their custom was to be Machm, like B'shameh, that so to speak, all the malachas that you started, even though a non-Jew or some machine is going to finish on Shabbos, it has to all be finished before Shabbos, and my father's house was Machm, like B'shameh, Nalik B'sil. So the Gemara brings a brayso Tanya, Amr b'tzadik, kachoyim en hogesh shal beis Rebbe Gamliel. These were the customs of the house of Rebbe Gamliel. Shay noisni klei lovin lekoyvis gimel yad mekayim b'Shabbos. That he would give white articles of clothing to the launderer at least 3 days before Shabbos. However, with tzvu mafil b'Erev Shabbos, but this colored clothing they would give in an even on Erev Shabbos. And he comments, from the words we learn, that white clothing are more difficult to wash than colored clothing. And what would be the reason? That's because the white clothing have, so to speak, they're more difficult to wash, and that's why it takes at least 3 days. Versus the colored, it takes a less amount of time. And the difference would be regarding how much you pay the launderer. If it's something that takes more required effort, then obviously you're going to be paying more. So therefore, you're paying more by the white than the colored. As the Gemara brings a story to illustrate this idea, that Abaye have a yoiv lehahu mana de tzvi lekatzo. Abaye was giving a certain colored article of clothing to the launderer. So he asked him, how much money do you want to charge me to clean my clothing? So Amalei Kedachiri says the same amount for the white clothing. So Amalei Kvakadmumach Rabbanon. So he says the Rabbanon already beat you to it because they taught us that the white clothing are more difficult to wash than the colored clothing. And if you want to charge me the same amount for my colored as the white, obviously, so to speak, you're not giving me a fair deal. You're trying to rip me off. So the Gemara continues now regarding a different idea regarding a kovis, a launderer, now that we brought in this subject. If a person gives an article of clothing to the launderer, so b'mishcha nisavli, you should give it to him in the measurement. Measure the article of clothing beforehand. And then you should take it back from him in measurement also. In other words, you should measure it when you give it to him and when you take it back. And the reason for it is as follows. D'tafe, because if it got bigger since when you gave it in to him, so he obviously ruined your clothing because he stretched it. V'batzer, and if it got smaller, he obviously ruined it because then it shrunk. In other words, he washed it in hot water and then it shrinks it. So either way, you have to know if he ruined your article of clothing either by stretching it or by shrinking it. Now the Gemara brings quotes from the Mishnah, the conclusion that the Mishnah said, Vishavin Elu Ve'elu Shatu'unan V'chulu, that both Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel both agree that one is allowed to have the beams of the the oil press and the wine press, that it should continue squeezing out the juices on Shabbos. To which Gemara asks, Maishna kulu de gazubu b'shami. What's the pshat? That all the other halachas that b'shami decreed and said that you're not allowed to start these things there of Shabbos unless it would be finished before Shabbos. And what's the reason by this last case regarding the beams of the olive press and the planks of the wine press where they're b'shamayah, they don't decree and they let this, so to speak, malacha of schita go on during Shabbos? Why is it different than all the other cases where they say that you can't start it because it's going to be continuing throughout Shabbos? So the Gemara answers, Hanach di yavid luhu b'shabbos, mechayev chatas, all those other cases that the Mishnah mentioned, where if you did those malachas that are happening on, now so to speak, by itself in Shabbos, if you did it, you'd be liable for a karma chatas. So gazu b'shami, erev Shabbos b'chasheches, so b'shami decreed that it's also forbidden to start and do it Friday before it gets dark, that it shouldn't be allowed to do it even on its own. However, kurios be sabbat, v'gula gas, regarding these cases of the planks and the beams of the oil and the wine press, the avilu b'shabbos le'mechayev chatas, that if a person himself would go ahead and squeeze it out on Shabbos, he would not be liable for karma chatas. So le'gazu, so therefore b'shamai did not decree it on erev Shabbos, because the only things that you would be liable for karma chatas that are isur deraisa, there he said that you're not allowed to have it even started before Shabbos and continue on its own. But something like this case, where even there wouldn't be a chiyuv chatas, even if you did it with your hands on Shabbos, so therefore it's going to be mutter to start on erev Shabbos, and there they did not decree. So the Gemara asks, this that we said that these cases are permitted to, so to speak, squeeze them out on Shabbos, it wouldn't be a issur d'oraisa, therefore you could even start according to b'shamai in erev Shabbos. The Gemara asked, man tana the chol midi da'asim emeila, who is this tana that's quoting, so to speak, for b'shamai b'sil, that holds that anything that happens by itself, for example, these liquids, where they would be squeezed out by themselves, as long as you start them on erev Shabbos, that shaper dummy, that it's allowed. In other words, it would be permitted even to squeeze it out with your hands on Shabbos. That is, since if it would be coming by its own, because it was already, so to speak, pressed on from before Shabbos. So therefore, even if you went ahead and you, so to speak, did it with your own hands, it wouldn't be a chiyuv chatas, and that's why you're allowed to start erev Shabbos. Who holds that? That now you could even squeeze it out on Shabbos, it wouldn't be a chiyuv of chatas. So Amr Rabbi Yisir Rabbi Chanina, Rabbi Shmuel, it's the Tanya Rabbi Shmuel, that none has written in the following Mishnah, regarding Hashum, the garlic, the Haboiser, and unripe grapes. And these are grapes in the beginning, when they're still small, that then they would take out the liquid from it, and they would dip in meat, because it was very strong, and it was very acidic, it was like close to like vinegar. The Hamalilois, and unripe grapes, and unripe grain, which is also, they used to grind it down, and they would, so to speak, press in it with stones, and a certain liquid would ooze out of the grain, and they would dip into that liquid. So all these different things, the garlic and the unripe grapes and the unripe grain, shariskim b'oyoyim, which was chopped from before Shabbos, Rabbi Shmuel Leimer, yigma m'shtechshach, that it could finish after dark, and that is after that it was chopped, and it was, so to speak, piled on and having it the liquid squeeze out, you could leave it there and let the juice ooze out on its own, and that's mutzul l'ketchilo, because that's the same idea that we're saying, that even if you did it with your hands, since it was already, it would seep out on its own. If on Shabbat you went and squeezed it with your own hands, it would not be liable for carbon chatas. That's why you're allowed to even initially let it, so to speak, continue on Shabbos on its own. And that's like we're saying is the opinion of b'shamai, that these cases are different because since it would happen on its own, a person would not be liable for the issur d'oraisa of schita, of the tol dav dash, of squeezing out something from a salad. However, Kiva says, and then we continue on to Amud Beis, lo yigmer, a person is not allowed, and that is, he's not allowed to finish, he's not allowed to leave on these weights that were squeezing out the liquids of these unripe grapes or the garlic, that it should finish on its own on Shabbos. So therefore, again, that's what we said, that the opinion that of this Mishnah, which was quoting Beishamah, that it's permitted the beams and the planks of the olive press and the wine press, because it would be, since it's happening on its own, even if you squeezed it on the Shabbos, it wouldn't be Chiv Chatzis. That's why it's different than the other cases. That's the Gribi Shmuel that says that one is allowed to, so to speak, have the beam, have something squeezing out on its own on Shabbos, because even if now you would take it on Shabbos, it wouldn't be Chiv Chatzis. Therefore, we weren't geyser letting a malacha happen, that even if you did it, it wouldn't be, so to speak, Issur d'oraisa. That's one opinion. The Gemara gives another pshat, another teretz, who is the Tana of our Mishnah, that lets it, so to speak, it wouldn't be Chiv Chatzis if you squeezed it out. Rebbe Laza Amar Rebbe Laza. Rebbe Laza says that it's Rebbe Laza. That is the Rebbe Laza who says that Rebbe Laza ben Pedas. That's Namayr. He says that it's Rebbe Laza. That's Rebbe Laza ben Shemua. That he's the one that when we have Stam Rebbe Laza of a mission in the Brisa, it's Rebbe Laza ben Shemua. So Rebbe Laza says it's Rebbe Laza, and that is Ditnan as we learn in the following Mishnah. Chalis Devash Shiriskun be'erev Shabbos, regarding honeycombs that a person broke up on Erev Shabbos, he banged it out, the yatsu ma'atzman, and then they oozed out from themselves, the halacha is aser, it's forbidden. That is, you're not allowed to eat or utilize that honey for eating purposes on Shabbos, and that's because we're concerned that now you might go ahead and squeeze it out, because it's, since it's squeezing out on its own, since you banged it, so it's oozing out, we're concerned if we let you use it, you might go ahead and squeeze it out more. So because of that chashash of schita, we say that it's forbidden to use it, even though you didn't do anything. Rabbi Elazar mata, Rabbi Elazar holds, that's permitted. That's the same idea that we mentioned before, that's the pshat in our Mishnah, that because even if you would squeeze it out, there wouldn't be a chiyuv chatas, because again, it's oozing out on its own. That's why he says that you're allowed to have it squeezed out on its own, and then you're allowed to utilize it. That's the same idea of our Mishnah that said that since it would be oozing out on its own, it wouldn't be a melacha deraisa to be require a person a chiyuv chatas if he squeezed out of his hand. That's why even initially we're allowed to let it happen on its own from before Shabbos, and even Mishami would say that we're not going. So those are two different opinions. Who's the town of our Mishnah? Is it Rabbi Shmuel or is it Rabbi Loza? So the Gemara inquires, Rabbi Yosef, Rabbi Chanina, my time loy omek Rabbi Loza. Why didn't he say like Rabbi Loza? The town of our Mishnah is Rabbi Loza, and instead he said it's Rabbi Shmuel. So Malachi would tell you that it's different, because Hasim, who, there by the case of the honey of Rabbi Loza, the Mekara, Eichel, B'Saif, Eichel, there it initially was a food item. And then at the end it was also a food item. That is because honey, even after it comes out of the honeycomb, it's also a food item. And therefore, their Rebbe Laza holds that it's mutter, because there you can't decree maybe you're going to be over on schita, that you're going to squeeze it out from when it's dark, because it doesn't apply schita, because that's not dosh. Threshing is when you're taking something, oichel from a basilis, you're taking a liquid from a salad. But here, where you're taking it, it originally was a food item, and now it's because it's a honeycomb, and then it's still a food item, because the honey is a food item, so therefore that doesn't apply, you'll never be chayav in schita, and that's why Rebbe Laza there says it's mutter. However, hacha, but here the case by the olives and the grapes, mikara ichel v'hashta mashka, originally it was a food item, it was a grape, it was an olive, and now it's a beverage. And there, regarding the olives and the grapes of our Mishnah, where it was first a food item, then a liquid, there we can be geyser that maybe you're going to squeeze it out from in the dark. And there, that's obviously the isra of schita. There, Rebbe Elazar would hold that it's not going to be it is going to be us, because that's different, that we should decree that maybe he might come to do schita, so therefore it's not a proof from his case of the honeycomb, because there it's never applicable to have a schita. Rabbi Elazar would respond to you that Hasha Minan Le Rabbi Elazar, the philosopher of Nam Yishai, but we find Rabbi Elazar says it, that it's mutter, even in the case of olives and grapes, not just when it originally was a food item and then ultimately was a food item, where you're telling me that it doesn't apply schita at all, because it has to be, so to speak, a liquid from a solid or so to speak, a food item from something that's psilis, that's not edible. Because he says that even when it was a food item and then ultimately it's a liquid, as he brings down, Kayasa Rav Hoshim Nada, when Rav Hoshim came from Nada, Osav Aisa must need to be yada. He came and he brought a brisa in his hand, which said the following, Zaysim Anovim Shariskan Erev Shabbos. Regarding olives and grapes, which are crushed from before Shabbos, v'yatzim yatzman, then they came out on their own, which is exactly like the type of case of our Mishnah. Asur in the Tanakhama says that it's forbidden. Rebbe Elazar, Rebbe Shimon Matirin. Rebbe Elazar, Rebbe Shimon hold that it's mutter. So obviously you see explicitly that Rebbe Elazar says this halacha, that it's permitted, that you're allowed to leave it, so to speak, oozing out on Shabbos, because, and that it wouldn't be, so to speak, a malacha derayis of a chiv chatas if it happened on Shabbos. That's even by a case when it was a solid, and then it was ultimately a liquid, so therefore he, so to speak, shows that Rabbi Elazar would say it even in the case of our Mishnah. However, the Gemara says, Rabbi Yosef Chanina, Brais Lishmele. But regarding Rabbi Yosef Chanina, he didn't hear this Brais. In other words, he didn't know about this Brais that said Rabbi Elazar was arguing even in the case of olives and grapes. That he didn't hear of. And therefore, from the case of Chalas Tavash, from the honeycombs, which was a Mishnah in Perk Chavish and Ishbara, that he said you can't compare to our Mishnah, because again, as a question, as we mentioned before, because there it's different. Because that case is a sal, as it was a food item, and then as it was a food item, therefore there it doesn't apply schita. Whereas our case of a Mishnah applied to food items, that's why he said it's not Rabbi Elazar, it's Rabbi Shmuel. But again, if he would have heard the brisa, he possibly would have said that it could be Rabbi Elazar, because you see explicitly from the brisa that it would be the same case of a Mishnah that could be Rabbi Elazar. And the Gemara says in reverse, Rabbi Elazar, my time alone, Rabbi Yosef b'Chanina. Why doesn't he say that the town of a Mishnah is Rabbi Shmuel? So Amalach Lavit Malo, didn't we say about that Omer Rabbi b'Chanina, Omer b'Yechanan? You said regarding this halacha, there are three different madrigas regarding the order, so to speak, of grinding things down. The first one is called risuk, which is chopping. The second one is called dicha, which is pounding. And the third one is shchika, which is, that is mashing, so to speak. So these are the three different levels. The furthest one, the one that's the least problem, is the last one, is mashing. The middle one is pounding. And the one that's closest to being a problem is the first level of, so to speak, is called chopping. So we learned as follows. But Mechusar and Dicha, Rabbi Yechida says that when it's lacking pounding, which that is the middle level, so to speak. It only had the first one, only had, so to speak, chopping so far. The kula amalei pligi, there nobody argues that it's going to be forbidden, because then that, so to speak, te'ina, where you, so to speak, pushing the olive press, you're having the planks or the beams pressing down on it, that's completing, that's right after the risik, right after the chopping, you're having this pressing it, then the malacha, so to speak, of shechita is happening on Shabbos. There everyone would agree that it's forbidden. Ki pligi b'mechasaron shechika. The whole machlikus was when it's lacking mashing, which that is the third level. And then as we're considering then, if you already had chopping and you already had pounding, then maybe it's as if it's already squeezed already, as already there's already schita done to it, and therefore there's nothing wrong happening to it. And therefore he says, v'hani nami, regarding the case of our Mishnah, ki mechasaron dichadamu. Our case of a Mishnah is similar to the case where it's lacking pounding. And that is, therefore, even Rabbi Shmuel would agree. And that's why the town of our Mishnah has to be Rabbi Lazar, because he says even by risuk of chalos devash, it's permitted. Even when you're, so to speak, doing the first level, you're doing the chopping. And even in such a case, Rabbi Lazar said that it's going to be permitted if it's being done on Shabbos. So definitely he could be the town of a Mishnah. But Rabbi Shmuel, regarding the case that he said before, that wouldn't apply, because there we said about that machlekes that everybody agrees if you only had the first level of chopping and you didn't have the pounding yet, then that would be forbidden. The whole machlekes they had between Rabbi Kiva and Rabbi Shmuel was regarding if you had the second level of pounding already and you didn't have the third level of mashing, maybe then it's considered already that it's squeezed already, and therefore it wouldn't be a problem happening on Shabbos, because, so to speak, the real shechita happened already, and this that you're squeezing it on Shabbos, the reason why there you wouldn't be liable, and that's why you could start it and have it go on its own on Shabbos, is because it's really done. But if it was only with risuk, if only had the first one of chopping, there even Rabbi Shmuel, we said, from Rabbi Yechanan, he would agree, and therefore he cannot be the town of a Mishnah, because our case of Mishnah is actually that case. When risuk was done, it was just the grinding, and then you're going to have, so to speak, this pushing down of the press, that then that's going to be full-fledged shechita according to both Rabbi Shmuel and Rabbi Kiva. Therefore, it has to be Rabbi Lazar, who's the town of a Mishnah, who he says even risuk itself is not a problem if it's being done on Shabbos, and that it, since it's happening on its own, it would not be a malacha d'iraisa to be chayav achatas, and that's why you could start it from before Shabbos. So the Gemara comments that Hoy Rabbi Yisrael Rabbi Chanina, Rabbi Shmuel, that l'shitasa, he said he followed the halacha as Rabbi Shmuel, because that's how he said that he's the Tana of our Mishnah. So now the Gemara continues, once they were discussing the olive press regarding the halachas of schita on Shabbos, so the Gemara continues with a related sugya that happens with an olive press regarding the halachas of muktzah. And that is, there were different items which were left for the olive pressers, the leftover oil that was left over for them, and they had these mats. There's a machlekes about those things that are there, if they're muktzah or not. And the Gemara continues, Shemesh shel badodin, regarding the oil of the olive presses, u'machtzolish shel badodin, and the mats of the olive presses. And again, these are things that are things that the mats are things that are used to cover the olive during the process of the squeezing and the fermentation of the olive oil. So there's a machlekes in the Gemara if it's muktzah or not. Rav aser b'shmosha, Rav says that it's forbidden to move it because of muktzah. That is because Rav holds like Rabbi Yehuda regarding the halachas of muktzah, who is more chomer, and that he says since there's no, you can't use these mats for any purpose of heter, they're not used for that. Therefore, it's like a klisha malachta elis, it's used just for a forbidden malacha. Therefore, we say it's muktzah. And Shmuel, he holds like Rabbi Shimon that doesn't have the halachas of muktzah that stringent. And therefore, he says that since it's not something that's actual, let's say, muktzah machmas gufa that has no usage at all, like a rock, therefore it's going to be permitted to move the thing on Shabbos, and it doesn't have the halachas of muktzah related to it. The Gemara brings similarly, Hani Karchi Dezuzi, regarding these paired mats, which these were a pair of mats that they used to cover their cargo on the ship. And therefore those mats, Rav Asir, or Shmuel Shari, similar, Rav says forbidden, because again he holds that it's a klisha malachlis, it's used for something that's forbidden. And Shmuel says permitted because since it has, so to speak, a function, so therefore we don't give it the halacha of muktzah, and that's why it's permitted. Similarly, the Gemara brings another discussion relating to muktzah, that Amar Reb Nachman, eiz l'chelba, the person has a goat that's used just for its milking, v'rochi l'gizasa, or a sheep that's used just for shearing, v'tanagilis l'bitzasa, or a hen that's used just for its eggs, v'turi d'radya, an oxen that are used just for plowing, v'tamri d'iska, and dates that are used just for commerce, and that is they're used to send somewhere else, so to speak, for selling. Rav Asar Shmuel Amamot, Rav says that they're forbidden, because again, you don't want to use them because you have it just for the purpose of, so to speak, different functions that are not related to using it on Shabbos. And Shmuel says that it's permitted because again, since they have a function, it does not apply regarding the halachas of muktzah. As the Gemara says, regarding all these different machlikas that we just mentioned between Rav and Shmuel, ukamifliki beplukt Rabbi Yehuda Rabbi Shimon, that they're arguing regarding a machlikas that's brought in the other places in Shabbos regarding the machlikas of Rabbi Yehuda Rabbi Shimon, how far is the extent of the halachas of muktzah? And that is, since Rav holds like Rabbi Yehuda, he holds that it's more stringent, and Shmuel that holds like Shmuel holds that the halachas of muktzah are not that chamer, and therefore he holds in those cases that it's permitted. So the Gemara brings a story related to this. There was a certain student that he paskined aloch and charta da argis like Reb Shimon. In other words, that was more lax regarding the alochs of muktzah. So the Gemara says that shamte Rav Nuna. Rav Nuna excommunicated that Talmud. So the Gemara asked, "Well, Reb Shimon Sirilon, but we hold like Reb Shimon, and that's how we paskin our alocha. So why did he excommunicate him? He paskin the right way." So the Gemara says, because ba'asid Rav Hava, that was in the locale of where Rav, where he was the, so to speak, he lived there. And it wasn't proper to, so to speak, paskin like Reb Shimon, although that's how we paskin, but Rav paskins like Reb Yehuda, and therefore where he was the Rav, it's not proper to paskin like Reb Shimon. A similar story where the Gemara brings different Talmidim, that the way they paskin was related to earlier Machlekesin. Hanitre Talmidim, there was these two students. Chad Matzl, one of them saved, which is talking about food and drink, when there's a fire in the house, that you're allowed to save a lot of food and drink to a chutz or to a yard that has an Erev. He saved all that food b'chadmon in one container. V'chadmatzl pa'arba v'chamishmon, and one of them was saving from the fire in four and five different containers. And that is regarding what we learned. There's a Mishnah that says, regarding this idea, about if when you're saving food, if you're allowed to take just one basket, or you're allowed to take even four or five baskets, and that's the idea. You could take even 100 meals. But the machlekas over there is, if it has to be four, or if it could be just one, or it could be even many. But this was these two different students, they did different ways. And the Gemara says, they were arguing about this machlekas of Rabbi Razav and Rav Huna, that this is what they argue about. That if you, so to speak, as the Gemara says in Perikol Kisra Kodesh, if you have to take only one, or you could take even many, that's the machlekes that they had, and that was how they were doing it according to the different opinions that were in this machlekes. Now we begin the next Mishnah regarding a similar theme of the previous Mishnah, is that restarting something Erev Shabbos that will continue into Shabbos, and specifically this Mishnah talks about the halachas of bishul, of cooking on Shabbos, where you're starting something in halacha on before Shabbos, and then it's continuing to happen on Shabbos. So the Mishnah begins, Ein tzaylin, you cannot roast basar, meat, betzal, onions, or beitza, and eggs. Only if it will be roasted from before Shabbos, then you're permitted to roast it before Shabbos, but if it's going to finish and conclude on Shabbos, then it's forbidden. Similarly, I'll put bread into the oven right before Shabbos, and not a biscuit on top of coals. Only if it's going to crust the surface of the bread from before Shabbos, then it's permitted. He says a little bit different, it has to be that the bottom of the bread will crust. The Gemara is going to explain what exactly is the machlekes. However, there is an exception to this halacha, that is mishalshlenes apesach betanim chashecha. A person is allowed to lower the carbon pesach into the oven, even though right before Shabbos, and it's going to be roasting and continuing even after it got dark. And that is, although we said just before that you're not allowed to roast, in this case it's permitted because since the Bnei Chabur of the Kahanim that do the Karban Pesach, they're what's called Zrizin, they'll remind each other what's forbidden and what's permitted. And therefore they're not going to come to what's known as B'machat B'gacham, not going to come to stoke the coals to make it cook quicker. There we weren't geyser, we let them do it and right before Shabbos, even though it's going to be happening on Shabbos. Similarly, it's also permitted to ignite the fire of the pyre by the fire chamber, which there was this fire that they would ignite and it would start slowly, which was this big fire of the Beis HaMikdash, which was Nazar in the Beis HaMikdash, and it would continue and burn and finally get into a big flame already when it was already Shabbos. And we're now concerned that maybe the Kahanim are going to have to, like, so to speak, make it burn from somewhere else even after Shabbos. And again, this is the Beis HaMikdash, which was a big one of the rooms in the Azar where the Kohanim used to warm themselves up by the big flame over there that was constantly burning, because the Kohanim would walk barefoot on the marble floor that was in the Azar, as the Gemara in Zvachim says, that since the Ritzpah, the floor of the Beis HaMikdash, was Kaddish, was holy, as it says, Bayemahu Kiddush HaMelech Techa Chatzar, that even the floor was, so to speak, had a din of Kedusha, and Klisharis, all the different vessels that they used, had a Kedusha. as the pasuk says, "V'yimshachim mikadoshayim," that the vessels were holy. So therefore, they compare just like kli sharis. When they do the avoda, there's not allowed to be anything separating between the kohen's hand, so to speak, and the kli sharis. So to the floor, which was kaddish, there wasn't allowed to be any separation between the kohen's foot and the floor. So therefore, they had to have their feet; it would get very cold. So they had to have this fire. So the halacha, the Mishnah is saying, is that the ladder started, just get it really just started, and it would, so to speak, turn into a real fire on Shabbos. And we're not concerned that they're going to come to do it on Shabbos. Again, because the Kahanim has reason, and they're going to remind each other. We continue on to the Tav of Chaf and Manav, where the Mishnah concludes, Ubegvulin kedei shetechas or berube. But regarding out of the base of Mikdash, there the halacha is that you have to light it, that it could catch the fire on the majority of it. In other words, it has to be lit that much, that at least most of it is lit before it becomes Shabbos. Not like the Beis HaMikdash, where even a little bit started. And out of Beis HaMikdash, we're concerned that you might come to make it burn faster or let it catch when it's already Shabbos. Regarding charcoals, then it's enough even if you started just a little bit slightly. And that is if the bonfire was from charcoal, then you don't have to have this condition, even out of the Beis HaMikdash, that most of it should catch on the fire. Because even a little bit, it will continue and turn into a big flame, because it's not the derech, it's not the way of charcoal to go out, and therefore you won't have to stoke it, it will happen on its own, and therefore there, it won't apply the gezerah of Shemichata, that maybe you're going to stoke it, just like we said regarding Bishul, and roasting and all these different things where we said you're not allowed to do it if it's going to be happening on Shabbos because you might come to stoke the flame. Here it's different because even though it's just a little bit, it will continue even unaided by the person and it won't go out.